This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order by going to rxbar.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew. That's rxbar.com/Andrew, promo code Andrew. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zan. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only Mr. Paul Thurrott. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. What a big
week. How are you?
I'm okay. You know, a little frustrated, but today I'm going to continue the tradition and have a glass of wine. I'm having a white wine spritzer right now.
Nice. Yeah, we should do the show later in the day so I could drink.
You know what?
I would just pass out.
Well, what time can you do it so you could drink?
Like 5:30. No, I don't know.
We could do a special drinking show.
Yeah.
We could do that. Man, I have a lot of questions for you. Over the last 2 weeks, we were back to Tuesdays, and people are really enjoying the fact that we're on Tuesday, and I'm liking it too. I feel like I haven't been defeated by the week, and that's always a positive, especially in my life. You know, not to feel totally dead by Thursday. And the conversations have been, you know, primarily around, last 2 weeks we were talking about like the retro gaming stuff and on the post show on What the Talk. And people are really interested. So I want to save that for like the end of the show or even the next post show about what my plan is, because I've gotten so many suggestions as to what we should do. Or what I should do, and these retro cabinets and cool stuff. So I want to talk about that. But next week, the Samsung Galaxy S9 is coming out. And a lot of excitement over this, way more than I remember with the S8. It's getting a lot of buzz from people that I wouldn't expect to be talking about.
Yeah, I think there's an understanding that Samsung is doing something pretty great here. You know, last year there were fears that we were going to have another Note 7 event. But I think the thing that came out of the S8, S8 Plus launch was that these guys are actually doing some pretty innovative designs. And I think that, you know, they've kind of maintained their lead. I think I talked about that last week.
Yeah, it's interesting. You wrote an article, and I want to kind of touch on this. You posted it yesterday on Thurrott. It's a premium article, so I don't want to dive 100% into it. Should read it, but I want to know, because it's titled My Plan for the Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus, which I want to talk to you about. Also, possible cheaper MacBooks?
We can talk about that, too. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, a lot is going on there, and very different stance than a couple of years ago, huh? That's interesting.
And a whole lot on my shoulders. I look like I'm wearing one of those 80s women's shirt with like the padded shoulders.
Well, you're broad.
I am.
You do look thin, though. I'll tell you that.
It's weird.
You do look like you drop weight.
I don't know. I actually feel fat today.
Very.
but anyway, okay.
Don't beat yourself up. I want to talk about this and a whole lot more, obviously. But before we do, I want to thank our sponsor, and that's RX Bar. Guys, I actually just ate one last night. I went out and I partook in a couple drinks, and I came home and I did not really want to eat, but I was hungry, and I had an RX bar next to me, and I had I sat there eating an RX bar at like 11 o'clock at night, and my wife goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm having an RX bar." You know why? Because it's whole food protein with no BS. And she goes, "Are you doing a live read?" I said, "Absolutely, I am." These guys are great. I personally eat them every day, so it's actually easy for me to talk about how great they are. There is no added sugar, no artificial colors, no artificial flavoring, no preservatives, and no fillers. It's 100% whole ingredients. So the way that this works is when you get an RX bar, the ingredients are right on the label. It tells you, for example, it'll say, you know, two eggs, you know, as the main protein, Obviously, that's the main source for protein in this. And then it'll list everything else that's in there. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, and they taste great. You could toss these in your bag when you're going to work. If you're traveling, a snack at work, a pre- or post-workout. I actually use them for afterwards, after I work out, because it gives me that little boost to keep going. And these guys are great, and they have a phenomenal offer. If you go to rxbar.com/Andrew, you could use the promo code Andrew, and you get $25 off your first order at rxbar.com/Andrew, promo code Andrew. These are great, great protein bars with no BS. Phenomenal. Paul, have you had an RX bar yet? I need to send this over to you.
I have not.
I don't know why I haven't sent this to you, because you would really love this. And it comes in, you know, sweet or savory. There's chocolate or fruit flavors. They essentially have, you know, something for everybody, which is great. RxBar.com/Andrew. Check them out. You also could buy them everywhere, but use our code when you buy them on their website. RxBar.com/Andrew. Get $25 off, 25% off, I'm sorry, your first order when you use promo code Andrew at checkout. You know what? I'm debating. Paul, should we start off with the rumors on the lower cost MacBooks, or should we go into the S9?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. You know what? Let's talk about the MacBook. Hell with it.
All right.
So this week, a lot of buzz started happening that Apple's considering releasing a inexpensive MacBook, or whatever they're going to call it, laptop. It could be an iBook again. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the rumor is specifically that there's going to be a lower cost option on the MacBook Air.
On the MacBook Air.
Right. Now, there's a separate rumor, and I think we mentioned this last week or something. I think we talked about this, but that Apple is going to release later in the year a 13-inch version of the MacBook.
Yeah.
Right. So the MacBook and the MacBook Pro share semi-similar designs, ultra-thin, that new kind of butterfly keyboard, the giant glass trackpad, small bezels on the display, that kind of thing. The MacBook Air is a now 8-year-old design. That kind of ushered in what I think of as the Ultrabook era.
Absolutely.
It's sort of the original Ultrabook, right? A classic design. It's a little more wedge-shaped than the more modern Macs. So it's thicker than it looks. They did a nice job with the design, you know, by beveling it and stuff. It looks like it's super thin, but it is. I mean, but it is thin.
You know, and they kind of, not revolutionized. That's a poor word I was going to use. But they really started the trend of stacking the batteries like that.
Yep.
And you're absolutely right. I mean, that was really single-handedly what started the whole Ultrabook.
Yeah. No, it's
market.
Iconic. I mean, in fact, to this day, there are still PC makers emulating this design. The Surface laptop is absolutely most like the MacBook Air, right? The thing that I wrote was that, so I should say, I'm sorry, just to address the rumors. It's most likely that what Apple's going to do is lower the price on the MacBook Air by going with lower cost parts. They might, I mean, God forbid, I hope they don't do this, but they could go to like a Core M chip or something.
What if they went back to plastic?
They probably won't do that. But it's an aging design in many ways. The latest version of it, which shipped last year, only got a slight bump with the processor, which I believe is a fifth generation version of the chip. So it's years out of date.
Yeah.
And I think they did that only because the one they were using before, Intel probably stopped making them or something. Like, I think they couldn't get them anymore. So they didn't, there's no really, you know, there was no huge point in the update other than that they did it. I still have a MacBook Air. You know, one of the things you and I have talked about recently is that I've been looking at updating to a newer Mac. This thing I have is 3 or 4 years old now. Yeah. I did buy a 15-inch MacBook Pro and returned it. It's so expensive. It's too big. I look at the 13-inch MacBook Pro, and in there you see what some people would describe as the logical successor to the MacBook Air, the low-end version without the touch strip. But it's like $1,300, you know, and it's – I kind of – if I'm going to buy a Mac now, I think I would want to buy one with lots of RAM, because I tend to do VM stuff on Macs because I want to run Windows apps sometimes. And 8 gigs of RAM is not necessarily enough. And once you start adding features to these things, they get really expensive. So – plus, they still only have dual core processors in the low end 13-inch version. So, I've kind of held off on that. And what's interesting is, I've been using this MacBook Air all along. I don't use it like as my daily driver PC or anything like that, but I use it not every day, but almost every day. And I got to say, like, you know, this thing has actually held up really well. You know,
which
when
one
I'm out
is
in
this?
The other,
which one?
The MacBook Air.
Which year?
I think the one I have is a 2014. I think early 2014.
Yeah, listen, like I've said this for a while, and you know, some people take it as if I'm a Apple apologist in some way, but they do tend, and this is from my own experience, they tend to give me an extra year compared to a PC.
Yeah, maybe more. I mean,
at most, you know, I'll give you an example. Before my MacBook Pro, I had a 2012 MacBook Pro. I'm sorry, a 2011 MacBook Pro. And then I got a 2015 MacBook Pro only because I broke the 2011. I was waiting for this one. And then now I have this one for work, obviously, this behemoth of a computer.
I mean, the MacBook Air is solid. I the one thing that people would point to correctly is the screen. It's not a Retina class display. It's 1440 by 900. That's just woefully. I can't hear you, by the way.
No, I'm sorry. I'm yelling. I'm yelling at my intern while.
Oh, okay. That's all right.
No. I muted myself to yell at him.
Okay. As you were then. I'm sorry.
I exposed myself by keeping the double shot. Go ahead.
His mouth is moving, but I don't hear anything coming out. You know, obviously the display and compared to today's Mac, there's a big bezel thing going on there. But the thing that's interesting about the MacBook Air is that it's still perfectly viable as a form factor today. You know, the weight, the size, the expansion, even the keyboard, the trackpad, these things are all great. It has the MagSafe connector, which a lot of people still prefer over USB-C because of its magnetic nature. And you can trip the thing without, you know, sending the laptop flying off the desk. Certainly valuable. And I kind of looked at it and I thought, you know, it's interesting. They'll never do this because Apple is very unilateral when it comes to this kind of stuff. They'll keep this thing kicking around forever without updating it like they've done with so many of their computers. And they'll keep forcing these other designs, the MacBook Pro, on customers instead. And I fully expect that rumor about the 13-inch MacBook is going to happen.
Yeah.
That will be the replacement for the MacBook Air. And by the way, if it is, you know, maybe that's the one I'll get.
You know, a lot of people, I was reading this complaint from somebody and he said, you know, you and Paul tend to praise the MacBook. And I said, well, but it's slow. And I said, but that is not Apple's fault by any means. That's a limitation of Intel's chipset at this moment.
It's slow?
It's a little slow. They were saying how they had it and they returned it because it was the MacBook. It's like the new MacBook.
I don't know what this. Oh, the MacBook. They're using.
I said,
Core
well,
free,
you know, you can't when you look at these products, you have to take it for what it is. I can't complain about the performance of this and say, well, I can't do any Photoshop. I can't do any photo editing because it's a Core. What is it? It's a Core M.
Core M3.
Yeah, it's a Core M3.
Here's how you should think of that computer. Actually, I should say too. I mentioned if Apple were to come out with a 13-inch version of the MacBook, I would get that. That actually isn't true if it comes with a Core M anything or a Y series Intel processor, which is kind of the modern version of that. At that point, I would just go with the 13-inch MacBook Pro and hope that they get to quad core.
Actually, they have an i5 version of this. They have an i5 version of the MacBook.
I don't. No, they don't.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
No, it's a Y series. It's the new version of the Core M.
Oh, it's nonsense. Okay, so it's funny actually how they do this. So on their website, if you go there, there's a Core M3. This dual core 7th gen, and then there's a dual core 7th gen Intel Core i5.
Yeah, so if you look up the specs for that, what you'll see is a Y in the model number if they display it. It's not a real i5.
That's very interesting.
If it was, by the way, that would be fine. That would be fine.
I'm looking at it. I'm going to select this. Let me see here. I'm sure you're right.
If you ever disagree with me in public again, I swear to God.
There's a Core M. There's an i7 also?
No, it's a Core. It's just an M series. It's just
This is interesting. And my dog is now barking. This is wonderful, Paul. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
What was I saying? So, with regards to at that point, I always choose Core i5 over Core M anything or Y series anything. Okay, that's the one aspect of it. But I looked at the MacBook Air that I'm using, which is perfectly. It's funny. I'm kind of in this rush to get rid of it for some reason. The truth is, it works great. It works perfectly fine. The screen is okay. You know, one of the things I, as a reviewer, don't get to take advantage of, and also someone who wants to run Windows 10 in some kind of virtualized state, is the high DPI support that Mac OS has, which is pretty great. It's not present in this laptop because it doesn't have a high DPI display. But I sort of thought to myself, you know, if they just put a Retina display in this thing, that would almost be enough to justify an upgrade. I think there are other things they could do. They could go to USB-C for charging, of course. Some people would hate that. They could go to a bigger display in the same case. Like, keep the form factor, have a bigger display in there, smaller bezels. It would look more modern. It'd be nicer. And, of course, if they went to the latest generation Intel chips, instant upgrade to quad-core processing, which is something I think they should do across the board. So,
yeah.
I don't know. For the low-end MacBook, there is this hope that because of the way Intel's gone with the core, the true i5 stuff, is you can have fanless designs if you do the thermals correctly, and there are a bunch of different examples of that. Microsoft Surface is one of them. I don't know if that thing is just too small, too thin, whatever, for that to work, but I'm sure Apple is working on it, so it's possible. You know, we might see that at some point in the future.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking on the website. They are not specifying that this is a Y, an i7Y at all.
Let me look.
I want you to look.
I'm going to look.
I am not
by any stretch of the imagination a Macintosh expert.
No, but I do find it interesting that they're not stating that. I don't know why they wouldn't state it, if that is.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
someone forgot. Because
so it's like a 2017, right?
1.4 gigahertz dual core i7 with turbo boost to 3.6.
Yeah, that's just the page I was already on. Let's see.
I'll tell you something. Put 16 gigs of RAM on this thing. It's not a bad machine.
Oh, that's what I wanted to say about this machine earlier. Someone, I guess, was complaining they had to send it back because the performance wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know, this particular device is not really designed for that kind of thing, right? I think the MacBook, the base MacBook, the deal there is it's portability over everything else. It runs Mac apps, you know, so you get that. It's better than an iPad Pro or whatever in that capacity. But I think that's the choice, right? You're not choosing between that and a MacBook Air. Well, MacBook Air is kind of an outlier, but you know, between that and a MacBook Pro, you're choosing between that and an iPad Pro. And you have to kind of look at it from that perspective. It's just not designed, you know, to compete in that space, you know, Photoshop.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I think people have gotten used to buying based on aesthetics and not performance. You know, nobody, and I say nobody, let me correct myself. I don't want to generalize here because I tend to generalize a little bit too much. But most people, they've gotten conditioned to the way that they purchase their mobile devices, like tablets and phones. You're buying it based on aesthetics, not based on performance. You ask anybody what the clock speed on an iPhone is or the Samsung Galaxy S9 is, nobody knows. Nobody knows how many cores exact. When I say nobody, again, I'm talking about the mass population, not you or I. These people don't know. They're buying it based on the fact that it looks good and the ecosystem exists. That is what's kind of happening in the PC market now, where you're buying on aesthetics and not performance. When you go and you see this MacBook, it's a stunning device. It's beautiful. Yeah. It really is a beautiful, beautiful laptop. It's super thin. It the edges are nice. But you don't. Most people see, oh, it's an i7. Okay, I know that's pretty good. Okay, I'm going to buy it.
Right. So I've been trying to find this, and I don't see it anywhere. But I mean, again, I'm not the Apple guy, but I am almost certain what you're going to find out is these are Y series.
I'm positive. Yeah, I'm positive it is. Positive. Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, so this thing you sent me is what? It's just the, does it specify the processor?
Yeah, it just says 1.4 gigahertz dual core.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't, yeah, it's amazing how not enough information that is.
You don't need, you know, they'll tell you what you need to know.
Right. But I mean, reviewers must have. Somewhere you would, but I, everywhere I look at this thing, I never see anyone specify the model of the processor, which would tell you exactly what this thing is. I don't believe it's a U series. I don't know why I've had that in my head forever, but
you know, there was an article here, and this is what I kind of wanted to get to, because we tend to talk about enterprise and the way that they use computers. If a cheaper MacBook comes out, MacBook Air comes out, right? Mm-hmm. If they drop the price to, let's say, $650.
Yep.
It's a great business laptop.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's semi-competitive at $1,000.
It is semi-competitive at $1,000, yeah.
If it was $799 or something, it would be even more so. And, look, we've talked about this a lot. Apple's strategy at the low end is not to introduce a cheap new thing, it is to take an old thing and make it available for less money. And they do that in all kinds of markets. It makes sense to do it here. Like I said, it's a perfectly viable computer. We have all these weird conversations about, you know, your kid's going off to college and you're going to give them this computer. Would it be good for 4 years? I mean, a lot of people might have a hard time swallowing this, but if you were to hand them a MacBook Air with 8 gigs of RAM and, you know, 256 gigs of storage or whatever, I think I could make the case that it would be perfectly fine for 4 years. It really would.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think. It's not, I mean, look, as a power user, as an enthusiast, whatever, you may scoff at that, and I get that. I wouldn't want to take this thing today and be resigned to using this for the next 4 years. But I am also not a student, so I think it would be fine.
My only problem with what I have, and I say this all the time, the 13 inch is too small and the 15 inch is too big.
Right. Well, that goes to my point though. Yeah. Again, without changing the form factor, you could fit a 14 inch display inside the 13 inch MacBook Air right now.
Yeah.
No problem.
No problem.
You could even go 3x2, mm-hmm. you know, which would be fantastic for productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see them do something like that. Even if they changed nothing else, that alone would almost make it happen for me.
It's interesting how we're tending to talk about this now. You know, this is becoming a reality where, you know, 3 years ago, I don't think you would have been as positive.
As positive.
Regarding, you know, using a MacBook. You know, I think now we're kind of... You remember, the ecosystem has changed, right? Everything is available everywhere. So at the end of the day, it's still...
And by the way, you can get a bunch done on the web, you know? And so it's interesting. One of the things I sort of struggle with Windows 10, which I do prefer to Mac OS, whatever, is that Microsoft is really adding a lot of crap to it over time. They're kind of bulking it up. And I find that a lot of the stuff that's been added to Windows 10 over the past couple of years is kind of nonsense and or just outright malicious, like games that I don't want, ads I do not want. Yeah. And so you look at something like a Mac and you think, well, okay, you know, I couldn't do this in a viable way a couple of years ago. Would it make sense now? And it's like, actually, there are very few blockers there, Andrew. And this is kind of a problem for Microsoft, frankly. Because when I look at the Mac that I have, the MacBook Air, I have a perfectly good Markdown editor. Visual Studio Code is available in both places. Microsoft Office is available in both places. Google Chrome is available in both places. It actually does work better in Windows, by the way, but you could kind of work around that. Photoshop Elements, I own on both platforms. You know, I'm running out of reasons not to go to the Mac. I mean, there are a couple of smaller things which I would think of as niceties that I like a little bit better. On the Windows side, I'm very familiar with apps like Microsoft Paint that I use every day. The keyboard shortcut stuff is way better on Windows than it is on the Mac. And in fact, in some cases, it's non-existent. I mean, I can be nitpicky about it, but I mean, this is, you know, we're reaching a strange inflection point. I mean, it's one thing in my world when you say, look, Windows Phone is a disaster. I'm going to use a mainstream mobile platform. The whole world implodes when I talk about this kind of thing. It's a completely another level of existence when it's like, hey, guys, I could switch to the Mac today and never skip a beat. I could probably switch to Chrome OS today and almost not skip a beat.
Yeah.
I could probably switch to Linux today and not skip a beat. And yikes,
you know, I mean,
it's kind of a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem. I mean, luckily, I don't think enterprise is going to switch over like that. That's what it really comes down to. Do you think there'll be a major shift over the next decade to, you know, a different, to abandon Microsoft? I don't know. I can't see that happening.
Well, I mean, the PC space moves slowly, right? When you talk about more vibrant platforms like a phone or even a tablet, I mean, the upgrade cycle is so much faster, especially on phones. You know, there were articles over the past week about how, like, you know, people are starting to use older phones, or, you know, it's like, come on, people replace their phones every 1 to 2 years at most, for the most part, because the carriers make it really easy to do that. In fact, it's kind of a no-brainer in some cases, especially if you're leasing the phone. Like, why wouldn't you get the new phone? With a PC, it's kind of slower moving. So moving away from Microsoft means two things to me. It's like moving away from a Windows PC, you know, a little bit. I mean, you'll see a little bit of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Moving away from Microsoft, though, which to me means moving away from like Office, from Microsoft solutions of all kinds. I mean, actually, yeah, I absolutely do see that. And, you know, Microsoft's future, we keep talking about this, is kind of in the cloud. The part that gets left unsaid there is Microsoft plays a much smaller role in the lives of individuals, you know?
Yeah.
The things you're using, the services, whatever, may ultimately be powered by Microsoft on the back end or whatever. But you're not going to be looking at a Microsoft something app or screen or whatever. And I think that happens.
Do you think that was a wrong move for them? Because that's not what you're looking at? You know, the Microsoft branding itself, the Microsoft, you know, it's
using the services, I think it was forced on them. I don't think there's any, you know, there's no doubt that Microsoft wants to be, you know, that loved brand like Apple or whatever, and then have products are in front of users and that kind of stuff. I mean, and there are exceptions. I mean, Xbox is a good brand. That's about it. I was gonna say something else, but that's pretty much
okay.
Yeah,
did you? So I want to move on to the Samsung stuff because the DxOMark did their review of it,
right?
And it is ranked the number one smartphone camera overall right now.
Yep.
But it's a little bit of a lie. If you look at these numbers, right? If you just look at the numbers, so they got a 99, Google Pixel 2, 98, the iPhone 10, a 97. But if you really look at this, it underperformed compared to the iPhone 10 in photos.
Okay.
But it overperformed in video. But the Pixel 2 overperforms both of them in video by a couple points. And it's the same as the they got a 99. So
let's not worry about the details here. So these cameras are all going to be vaguely
all going to be very comparable. Yeah.
If you look at any of those phones that are in the top 7 or 8 or whatever, they're probably all very comparable. It's fine. You know, the Pixel 2 XL, the Pixel 2, and then the previous Pixel and the previous Nexus 6P and 5X objectively take superior nighttime shots. There's no doubt about it. These phones have always excelled at that kind of thing. I think all of the cameras take really good shots in different conditions. Somebody asked me about like the Galaxy S8 from last year in the weekly column I do. And I posted some shots that my wife took over the past week because she has one of these cameras. It's one of these phones. It takes great photos in many conditions. It's great. It's great. There are very few times you like take a picture and think, oh, this is a piece of junk. So, the point is it needs to compete. You know, for me personally, I'm not going to even consider a phone that isn't in that top 8 or whatever. It has to compete with the best.
Yeah.
I'll evaluate it myself. I've gotten very used to the ways in which the Pixel phones, the Google phones, excel from a photographic standpoint. If this device doesn't measure up, then we're done talking. It has to meet that.
I think
it's a high bar.
I mean, they've already set this high expectation as far as, you know, quality goes. I'm very much curious about how well it performs in low light. We all know that all these cameras do well in outdoor conditions. I mean, I could take some stunning photos on a iPhone 6. You know, you put me outside with enough light, I could take a great photo, but come inside and things start falling apart.
The iPhone has never done well in low light. And I don't know, you know, the new one, I don't remember, but I'm sure it's a little bit better, but it's not up to the capacity of a Google phone. It just isn't. Remember that one of the key, maybe the key feature of the Samsung Galaxy S9 Plus in particular, is its motorized automatic aperture switching. It's designed to go to a larger aperture in low light conditions to let in more light. I need to test this because that's exciting. The point of all this should be a normal human being takes a shot that comes out great. And if you think about a typical low light shot, whatever it might be, you're outside at a restaurant at dusk and, you know, the lights are coming down. Maybe there's some ambient lighting from the restaurant or even some neon lighting or whatever it might be. on a Google phone, you can kind of highlight the light, and it does this wonderful thing where it just sets the frame exactly correct. It makes the darkers dark.
Yeah.
And it creates this beautiful photo. It's possible that the Samsung phone will do something completely different because, you know, for a lot of people, the idea is like, it's a little dark in here, but what I want to do is take a picture that doesn't come out dark and grainy. I want it to kind of up the light level so it looks more normal and is what we would call like a better photo. But in my experience, a lot of times, I'm not actually looking for that kind of photo. I want to, you know, you focus on where the light source is. It makes the dimmer parts even darker. And you create this beautiful high contrast kind of nighttime or dark photo that looks wonderful. So I'll test it. You know, we'll see. I don't have one yet, so I can't.
Are you getting it the first day?
Yeah, I pre-ordered it.
Yeah. I forgot to place the pre-order. I have to do that today, but.
I think you can still do it to get it on day one. I don't think they'll pull an Apple thing on you where it's like, yeah, we have limited, you know,
6 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 weeks.
Anyone who wants one can get one, you know? I think,
This is interesting. You know, do you think when it comes to the war between these smartphones, is it the camera or is it the battery? Like what is the main driving force every year for these? Because I'm trying to think, you know, when you go and buy an iPhone, you know, your 2-year contract is up, you're getting a new phone. What's keeping you? It's the ecosystem, really. Like I'm gonna struggle with this now.
What keeps you? Like in Android versus iOS?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know that everyone considers that every single time they upgrade a phone. I think most people go down a path and then they stay there unless they start having bad experiences, and that causes them to sort of think about it. You know. This is years ago too. I have a good friend who's in the tech industry. He's kind of moved around. He used to work at Microsoft and now he's somewhere else. I don't want to explain exactly who he is, but, you know, we would talk about this kind of stuff and many years ago. And I mean, like maybe 3 or 4 years into the whole iPhone thing, you know, probably I think the iPad had come out and, you know, he had said something like, you know, I probably spent like $1,000 on content between apps and movies and TV shows and stuff. And it's like, this is going to prevent me from moving to Android. It's like, that's ridiculous. I mean, if a normal person without any money had spent that much money on content, you know, maybe that would be a blocker. But this guy, like, you get like a 6-figure job. Like, you could spend $1,000 right now and replace every single app you ever bought or whatever, and you wouldn't even notice it. Like that's just sort of an invented metric. Like, and by the way, it's not like you have to go purchase every app you've ever bought. One of the best features of iOS, the new version, and this is actually really interesting to me. I noticed this on my iPad Pro. I don't remember what it's called, but there's a setting in settings where it will basically take, it puts apps to sleep that you don't use, right? So what it does is it saves the data for the app on the device, but it removes the app to save disk space. So the, you know, the icon for the app is there and it's got a little cloud thing under it. And the idea here is that if you need that app again, you just tap on it, it auto reinstalls, and then you get your data back. You don't have to sign in again and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of a neat feature, and it's designed specifically for storage space. But what I found is that this feature is actually a really good indication of which apps you don't use.
Yeah.
Because that's how it works. If you don't use a certain app, I don't remember the name for it, I'm sorry, but I'm just going to say goes to sleep. That's not the right term, but it offloads the app. So, for example, on my iPad Pro home screen, I just noticed this morning, there are apps I literally put on my front home screen, which allegedly would be the apps I would use the most, right? They're right there. And they include iBooks was one of them. And actually the iTunes U was one of them. Mm-hmm. And Google Calendar was one of them. And I use Google Calendar every single day. I just don't use it on my iPad Pro. So those three apps were still on my home screen, but they've been sucked off the device to save space because I might need them for, you know, movies or whatever else I have. That's interesting. I guess my point is, you know, when you switch platforms, that's a nice chance to do a little bit of digital decluttering too, right? You could, you know, look honestly at the apps you need and use, and just buy the handful that you actually do need.
That you actually do use. Yeah,
I don't think this switching thing is difficult as many people
make it. I'm looking at what I use. Do you know how many apps? We do this every now and then, but do you know how many actually apps you use every week? Not daily, but every week.
Oh, I can tell you right now the ones on my phone, because it varies, right?
Depending on the device. I'll do the same thing too. I'll count two.
Well, I mean, let me just tell you what they are, because the things I actually use, like on a, let's say, a daily or semi-daily basis, are Duolingo, right? With the language learning thing.
Yeah.
Instagram and Facebook.
You've been doing it forever.
Yep. Calm, which is a meditation app. This is a relatively new thing for me. I've been doing this since the beginning of January, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not quite every day, but almost every day. Pocket, which is the podcast app, every single day. Audible, almost every single day. I kind of go back and forth between Pocket and Audible for that kind of content. Yeah. Sorry, Pocket Cast. And that's about it, right? I mean, there are the apps, say, like once a week or, you know, something like Pocket, the reading app. I don't do a lot of reading on the phone. Google Play Music. Actually, I probably do that three
Google
or four
Play
times.
Google Play Music. Okay. And this is on the Philips Hue app. Phone? This is on your iPhone or?
No, the Google Pixel, the one I use every day. And of course, I look from time to time at things like my calendar, if I'm traveling more often than time to time, my email, Google Photos. Sometimes there's a reminder there. It's like, you know, rediscover this day from 2015 or whatever. But those are the big ones. I mean, I think that's the big stuff.
So I'll tell you what I have. I use the iTunes, Apple Podcast app.
Yep.
And it sucks, but I've gotten so used to it, and I know it sucks.
I literally paused when you said that. I thought, do I comment on that?
No, it sucks. It's terrible. It's garbage. I use that. Let's see. I'm on the first page. I use that. I use Google Photos, Skype, PayPal, Uber.
Yep.
All right. I use Verizon Messenger because it forwards my text messages from my regular phone.
Yeah, I mean,
so you
go into the world. I mean, a lot of what you're saying is dictated by the fact that you're actually leaving your house.
I'm actually leaving my house. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's important, right? I mean, when I'm traveling, I would use Uber, but when I'm home, I mean.
But a lot of it also is work stuff. You know, I combine work and everything into one device. Yeah. I still think that the thing that's missing from this is to have profiles on iOS. I think it's a big problem that you cannot do profiles. Logging in and logging out of profiles. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Yeah. I can't hand this phone to my kid and be like, here you go.
Right.
If I could set up a profile for her to be like, here you go, that would be a different story. It would be, you know, easier. Or if I could put in work mode or home mode and I could have my home profile or work profile.
The answer to every problem on an Apple device is to buy another hardware device.
Here we go. Let's get another iPhone.
It really is. I mean, if you want to know what Apple's thoughts are there.
But I'm looking at this. I really don't have as much garbage as I imagined I would. Like, I have Seamless because I order at work every now and then. Crowdfire for social media management. I have the Pizza Hut and Domino's app. Andrew was not sober at that point when he installed these and ordered Pizza Hut or Domino's.
The one thing I do like about Android, by the way, is that you can kind of segregate your apps into the most important ones and then the less important ones in an elegant way, like that matches the way Windows works, right? So you can have like home screens, like I know you can have those in iOS as well, but in iOS you only have home screens. Like, you have an app list in Android that has all of your apps. It's basically hidden away. So if you don't want any of those apps pinned to your home screen because you don't use them that much, you don't have to see them. They don't have to be in the way. You know, you don't have to manually create something where you're like shuttling them off to some folder in a tertiary home screen somewhere. It's kind of a nice way to do it. Because sometimes, you know, like Project Fi, like I am using the service. I don't need the app almost ever, but it has to be on the phone
to use it.
And every once in a while, you know, it has to, if I'm traveling and using a lot of data, it will pop up with a little notification. Say, hey, by the way, you're at 80% or whatever of your allotment or whatever it is, you know. Useful, but I don't want to look at it every day.
On Therat.com, you have a article about Android P.
Yeah.
And what it has to be.
Well, what it should be.
What it should be.
Should be. Should is the key word in that headline, I think.
So, do you want to touch on this a little bit? Because, we're talking about OSs, and it's amazing how mobile OS has become the majority of our conversation here over the last couple of years. And obviously, there was a new build that got released today also, right?
Of iOS, not of Android.
Of iOS, yeah. But these are topics now people constantly talk about. So with Android, however, I the last couple of releases have been not monumental.
Right. That's true.
Do you think it's time for a major UI shift or what do you think it should be?
So I don't. I actually think that Google is ahead of Apple in some ways from what I would call a UX perspective, but it's UI plus user experience, meaning that several years ago, they came up with this notion of material design as their design language, and they implemented it in the operating system and in their key apps, and eventually across all of their apps, really. I mean, including Google Chrome on the desktop. You see it in third-party apps. You see it on iOS, by the way. It's kind of interesting, not just in Google apps, because it's a modern, flat, kind of nice look, and there's a lot of usage scenarios that it just really makes sense for. It's a nice look, and I feel like it's done right. It's consistent, looks good, et cetera, et cetera. Apple, you know, starting with iOS 7, tried to go down this kind of typography plus UX thing and whatever. But there's a lot of basics missing from the iOS user experience that have been in Android forever, even predating material design. Like the thing I was just talking about, the ability to arrange icons on a screen the way you want them and to hide things you don't want into an app list somewhere. And, you know, to me, like, Apple is actually further behind, I would say, from a user experience standpoint. They're ahead in other areas that are important, like reliability and stability and performance, hugely important, obviously. But just from like a basic user experience standpoint, I mean, it's weird how Apple just hasn't moved the needle, you know.
Is it still the old Apple mentality where they'll tell you what you need and you really don't need this, and to limit features, or?
Supposedly, remember that one of the stories that came out recently was that Apple was going to slow down iOS development, and the developers within the company needed more time to get certain features done. They could kind of punt it out to the next release. So you might have had something that would have appeared in iOS 12 this year, would have been buggy, would have been fixed over some series of releases after iOS 12. Now what they're saying is, if you want, just put it in iOS 13. Like, let's just get it right, and let's focus on stability. Let's focus on quality. I think it's a good idea. The bad news is Apple was apparently working on an update that is what I just described, the ability to, you know, elegantly configure your home screen in a way that makes sense for you. It's not going to happen now in 2018, apparently. So that's too bad, because that's something we've needed since, I don't know, 2007, you know, whenever the first iPhone came out. I mean, it's too bad.
It's interesting how everything, I keep saying that today, but it's pretty much, it's everything is simplified, but not really. You know,
yeah,
the same problems exist. You know, I mean, the fact that now we have a file manager on our phone, you know, for iOS.
Have it on Google has one too.
Google
I
has
think
one
it's called
too.
Files Go, you know, whatever. Yeah. I mean,
on Google, you could have at least installed a third party application and you were able to do it.
Right.
But I was just showing it to somebody at press, actually. I'm wearing a shirt today. I was at press last night, and Olivia, one of the waitresses, she's a big cosplayer, and she does like Twitch stuff. And we were talking, she goes, Andrew, should I get the S9? I said, well, why do you want to get it? He goes, you know, I always have a pain. It's always a problem for me to download stuff that people send me. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, look, you can't download, like, on Android, I know you could, like, click on it, it'll download it to, like, the file manager, essentially, and then you can find the stuff and sort it. And you can't on iOS. I'm like, well, now you can, because it has a file explorer, it has a file manager. So you could actually download whatever, and it's in folders here. You know, you could get it on a folder. So I showed her how to do it through Dropbox. She's like, oh, I had no idea I could do this.
Sure.
I go, see, the beauty of tech, what the tech came in handy today. But
well, they kind of go kicking and screaming into that stuff. You know, obviously Apple values simplicity over complexity, even if it hinders your capabilities. But yeah, it's there. It is there now.
It is there. And it's interesting that it is. Let's take a moment, Paul. And let's take a moment.
A moment of silence and or
let's take a moment of silence here for everything we're doing. What's going on with Microsoft? What's new on the Windows side? Any changes from last week? Any updates?
No, I mean, other than there have been three insider bills, are obviously getting ready to finalize this latest version of Windows. No, I mean, I've had a personal struggle with the Windows stuff over the past 3 weeks now, probably because I'm, you know, writing about it for the book. So I think I talked about my issues with the backup and recovery stuff, which is humorous and or frustrating, depending on your point of view. And I just spent some time documenting things like clean installing Windows 10 and then upgrading to Windows 10, meaning you've got a Windows 7 PC and a Windows 8.1 PC. And it's like this giant time-consuming project to kind of document how this works. And it occurred to me that this is coming to an end. Like, having to have the skill to update a previous version of Windows to Windows 10 is something that almost no one is going to do this year, you know, outside of corporations. That if you are still kicking around with a Windows 7 computer that you bought in whatever year, 2011, 2015, you know, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
You might want to just stick with that. Yeah. You know, like the notion that you're going to pay to get a copy of Windows 10, blast that thing onto the computer, go to the effort of backing everything up first to make sure that you don't lose anything if anything goes south, and then you're going to have some kind of a good experience on that computer, is so infinitesimally small. It just sort of occurred to me, like, this might be the last time I ever write about this. I don't think this is something I'm ever going to discuss again with anybody. There's no need.
Well, I mean, in reality, most people don't go and buy a copy of Windows when a new version comes out and upgrades. Most people go and buy a new computer with that version of Windows on it, and they stick with it. But the fact that Windows 10 now has become the service that's constantly updated, you're absolutely right. It's totally out the window. It's not a...
And this is, you know, this kind of factors into the Android discussion too, because, and I would say all phones, but Android in particular, you know, one of the big worries on the Android side for some reason is this fragmentation issue, that if you look at the stats, which I did today, by the way, Android 8 and 8.1 are on 1% of phones out in the world, right? So it's been a great rollout.
Yeah.
And people point to that and they say, see, this is a big problem. I point to that and I say, this is not a problem at all. The issue is not Android versions. As long as the apps that people want to run fine on multiple versions of Android, and they do, that's all people really care about. And the platform capabilities that are coming in the last couple of releases, which is something you alluded to earlier, are not that dramatic. So it's fine. Relax. You know, the fragmentation thing is kind of a lie, but a bigger issue, I think, and this is something that Google does need to address, is the security update issue. And if you have a Pixel phone, and there are a couple of other phones, if you have an unlocked phone, you can often get security updates every single month, which is how it should be. It's how it is on Windows. It is, well, actually, Apple doesn't really do security updates like that, but Apple routinely updates iOS.
More and more now.
Yeah. This is actually a core problem with Android. You know, the notion that you could buy I don't want to name a phone. I'm not trying to disparage companies, but some branded phone from some whatever place, and you're using it on some wireless carrier, and some combination of those two factors means that you will only rarely or maybe never get any security updates is
terrible.
Broken. It's broken. I mean, this should work the way it does on Windows. If they want to deliver an update, I mean, why would a wireless carrier have anything to do with this at all? You know, it's not about the bandwidth, obviously. I guess the worry is that we're going to impact the network somehow with these new, you know, whatever.
What's the impact on iPhones, right? If because Apple handles these updates and everybody gets the update. So what would be the consequence of adapting this mentality to the Android side?
Yeah. It works on the Apple side because Apple is a good company, right? I mean, in this regard, like, they take quality pretty seriously. Obviously, they've had some problems. I mean, we're all aware of that. But there aren't a lot of stories about iOS 11.1.3 came out and it broke all the phones and they have to rush another update out. Like, you don't really see that a lot. I'm not saying it never happens exactly, but, you know, we've had those issues in the Windows world from time to time, et cetera. They're able to do that in part because there aren't that many iOS devices, right? I mean, they have some number of versions that they support for each of these updates, whatever it is, for different iOS versions. It's not that hard. The matrix is kind of small. You know, the problem on the Android side is that anyone can license this OS. And so there are a million different device types out in the world. They all have different specs and hardware configurations and screen sizes and all kinds of stuff. And it's a mess. It's just like the Windows world, you know, except worse. It's the number one thing that makes it great, all the choice you get, is the number one thing that makes it terrible, because supporting all of that choice is so onerous, even Google can't do it. And it leads to problems. And this is one of those things that it leads to. So I think that Google, as the platform maker, needs to take it on themselves to, I don't know, fashion Android in such a way that it can apply these updates to any Android device and it will always work. And we don't have to worry about all the differences.
So who should be responsible? I mean, it should be
Google.
Google should be responsible.
Yeah, Google.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. I mean, they make the platform.
They make the platform. Why not? You know, I mean, I guess their go around on Android is to, because compared to the early days, everything was built into the OS. Now they've kind of broken apart where through the Play Store, you could get certain updates for certain features of Android.
That's right.
That needed. And I think that's the right way of doing it. But there are still some critical issues.
Well, there's also, I'm sorry.
That they can't do that way.
There's also this notion of AOSP versus, you know, Android, right? Where Android has the Google Play Store and Google Apps and there's certain pre-configurations and so forth. Hardware makers pay for that and they pay Google for that. So there's money is exchanging hands. And every one of my Android phones just sprung to life because I said something that sounded like the assistant. They like literally all like so. And I think that, you know, Google can change the terms of licensing at any time. It's their license. I mean, I think delivering these security updates needs to be part of it. That you're buying into Android. You need to, you know, this needs to be a thing. The article that I wrote today was basically the thing that you and I kind of touched on, I think, recently, which is just that Android is a dumpster fire. And I think that needs to be fixed. You know, Apple is allegedly slowing down iOS development, like we just said, to focus on quality. I suggested at the time that Microsoft should do the same thing with Windows 10. I suggested today the same thing for Google. This should be job one. This is like fundamental stuff for the platform. And you know, Android is dominant today, but that can change. And I think if they're serious about not changing, you know, they need to address this issue.
It's fascinating. You know, 2018, it's going to be a very interesting year where everything is headed. You know, the concept of well, how we've done things is really shifting on the Microsoft side. ARM. I mean, we talk about this all the time, and I think this is monumental. I think this is a gigantic, gigantic shift on the way that we conceive PCs and the way that we look at the whole market as a whole. Now we have another player, and it's good enough, right?
It's good enough.
Really? Good I enough. Mean, this is good enough.
It's good enough, the Paul Thurrott story. we'll see. I mean, I think the biggest impact that ARM's going to have on the PC industry is to goad Intel into finally doing the right thing when it comes to
mobile,
yeah, to truly good battery life. And
it's
so
amazing. They still don't get it.
Yeah.
Or they still haven't gotten it. Not that they don't get it. I'm sure that they're actively attempting.
You know what it is, though? When you look at the stuff that has worked in the short term to bolster the PC market as the overall market has collapsed, it's like these premium PCs, right? So premium PCs take a couple of different forms, but gaming PCs is obviously one of them. But the other kind of premium PC are just the kind of what we used to call like a workstation, like a Microsoft Surface laptop, or not Surface, Surface Book 2, or, you know, Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon or whatever it might be. They're expensive. I think for those devices, performance is such a huge thing. Like Intel kind of shines there. So, you know, you could even see it as recently as a few months ago when they're like, hey, we're going quad-core everywhere on the U-Series. That was an amazing performance bump, and they were able to do it without impacting battery life. It was great. But the goal that Microsoft has for this year for PCs is to bring that growth rate to mainstream PCs. And when you get down to the mainstream PC, you know, you're looking at things like these computers, these always connected PCs. It's about a kind of a broader set of capabilities that has to include uptime, right? Which is battery life and standby time and also always on connectivity. And these are areas where Intel has done very poorly. And so they need to be able to combine their success with performance with some capabilities they've never really had, frankly. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't think ever really.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Very interesting. Guys, if you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show following What the Tech. It's called What the Talk. And you could access this by going to patreon.com/whatthetech and funding us there. As little as $1 per episode, you could get access to our bonus content where Paul and I just chit-chat about, you know, things that are not in the news, but things that come to mind. Like we've been talking about retro gaming the last couple of weeks. And I have a different topic for this week I want to talk about. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be it's actually amazing how many comments I get for the bonus show now. compared to the actual show. They're like, yeah, we got it. But I want to talk more about that other stuff.
Sure. I want to talk about your arcade cabinet design. You're screwing it up.
You're screwing up that arcade cabinet design. I found a company, actually, $400. I could get the whole thing all done. Yeah. So I want to mention that. But Paul, all things Paul, go to therot.com. You can sign up there for the premium service. Paul and Brad and the rest of the team do a tremendous job over there. Paul is working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He's the hardest working man in technology. The most honest man in technology.
Wow. There's a lot of compliments in there.
You know what? I have to tell you,
you work 7 days a week.
I have to tell you, I do think you're one of the most honest people in tech journalism. I really do. I don't think you make up stories. I don't think
right, I do not make up stories. That's
you
true.
Do not make up stories. You yeah, do not, yeah. you know, yeah. you don't write positive reviews because of kickbacks. You don't write positive reviews because you're angry at somebody at the other side. You're actually a journalist, Paul. Can you believe that? You're doing your job.
It's a dying breed.
Yep. Yep. I one of my pet peeves, man. I hate bias. I hate hypocrisy. And I get criticized for that because sometimes I change my mind. And then people say, Andrew,
changing a mind is not being a hypocrite.
It is not being a hypocrite. A hypocrite is applauding one thing.
That's what smart people do.
Yeah.
You are apprised of new facts and your position shifts. That's what you're supposed to do as a smart person.
Absolutely. See, Paul said I'm smart, so I am smart. And I'm going to end it on that. Goodbye.